Download the Cliff Central app, available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to our leadership conversation, and today we're going to talk about Nelson Mandela leadership. So we were going to have Sello Hatang, the CEO of Nelson Mandela Foundation, with us just to kick it off for a few minutes. He is, of course, very busy with everything happening. And then to add to that, Gugu Zulu was part of a group of people, including his wife, Letshego Zulu, who they participate in a Track for Mandela expedition on, I think it's Kilimanjaro, and passed away. The news just broke today. So it was on behalf of the Nelson Mandela Foundation, and he's had to rush off there to meet with the family, so he won't join us for a few minutes. But we've got Dr. Brenda Hutting, who's written about him, and even a book, and I've seen some great articles. Of course, I've made a study of him. Louis has. Alice, all of us. He's part of our DNA almost. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about Nelson Mandela leadership for the next 20 or so minutes. And I think the first question I have is, what made him such an exceptional leader? The world does believe he is exceptional. What is it that made him such an exceptional leader? Who wants to kick off with that one? Brenda?
Yes, thank you for that, Adrian. I believe he is an exceptional leader and will be remembered because the quality of the influence he had on the hearts and the minds of people has stayed.
Somehow it's still there.
And what Alice said in our previous segment is, and also Prof Theo, is that we have to actually go and have a look what he did, how he did it, so that we can sustain it. Because my opinion is we don't have the time to reinvent the wheel, and we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We can just go and have a look at these iconic leaders and just build on what they've already brought to us, because the fundamental truth is it works.
So why is he still with us?
What are those qualities, those attributes, those, that's something he had, that magic, that's still with us? Alice,
that's a very good question, Adrian. I mean, I don't know where to begin, because last night I had the opportunity to be at the 14th Nelson Mandela annual lecture.
Were you there with Bill Gates, I think.
Which was delivered by Bill Gates, the co-founder of Microsoft. And just getting to the lecture at the Mamelodi campus of University of Pretoria made me realize, you know, in hindsight, to why, you know, Nelson Mandela would always be with us, just because of the immensity of the work that still remains to be done to build this country. You know, I grew up in a township, but yesterday driving through the streets of Mamelodi and knowing that that township is just a stone's throw from the seat of political power of what was then, you know, the apartheid government, I just couldn't imagine what it would have been like to live in that township. But you can still see the scars of, you know, where we've been and where we still are as a society, just driving through there. So there was so much symbolism, the fact that the richest man in the world, you know, could drive through there. I wonder what was going on in his mind when he was driving to the University of Pretoria campus,
where some of the most influential people sat, with some of the wealthiest people sat at that lecture in the middle of Mamelodi, where you still
of poverty, destitution. In fact, the chairman of the Nelson Mandela Foundation, I think Professor Ndebele, he did reflect on the fact that, you know, as a society we are aware some people feel lost and discarded. And the essence of Bill Gates' lecture was that we must find a way to live together. The theme was living together. And living together really begins with us prioritizing the investments that we need to make in our young people. And I think that's what Madiba embodied so well. Hence, people like myself could look back to 1990, you know, when Mandela came out of prison, and think, that walk of his outside Victor Verster prison was the beginning of a long walk to the idea, towards the ideals that he so cherished.
The challenge with Mandela, though, Nelson Mandela, is we do revere him, and he's almost like a saint. And if we don't unpack it in more practical terms, we'll always get stuck in that space where we believe we can't lead like him. that no one can ever be like him. And I think that's a myth. He was human. He was normal like you and I. Yes, exceptional in some ways, but we can, if we want to, if you want to, if I want to, and I really have a strong desire to lead authentically and to be real and to, yeah, just to be a great leader. I can lead like him. No one will ever be him. No one will ever be me. But how do you know, what are the attributes? What stands out with him? Louis, you want to jump in here? We go back to you, Brenda, from your book as well.
Yeah, Artie, I just want to say that many years ago, I'm old enough to say that I worked on some projects with Nelson Mandela, two of the projects, and it was a great experience. I also have close contact with people who were in opposing sides to him, who saw different sides of him, and how he learned to discipline a lot of his feelings, you know, antagonism as well. So he was a pretty mortal person. But the one symbol we take from him is very important. He's not a saint. We can turn to another source for that kind of source. Is the fact that he endowed the country with the spirit that you can do it. I think it's very important. This is the light that Brenner spoke about. You let your light shine in that sense. Now, he consistently managed to do so. And nowadays you find people easily default to negative feelings and criticism, etc., and malice even. Very few have got this spirit about them that, yes, we can do it, and very few are believed in the process. That's what he endowed, because at the core of good leadership is the fact that I feel I can do it, I feel you can do it, I feel we can do it. And it's not a cliche, it's a kind of inner strength and peace you have within yourself.
Okay, so for me to help a nation believe they can do it, or an organization, what else did Mandela have then? Because you've got to, I like what you said there, I really believe I can do it, I believe you can do it, I believe then we can do it. That's an attribute almost, but it's also a big picture context. I mean, somehow you must see a bigger picture so clearly in your mind, and you must be so convinced that that is the best for all of us. But I must believe that I can walk towards that vision, and I must believe that you can walk to that vision, and I must believe that ultimately we all can do that.
Remember, Artie, last week, Dr. Brenner spoke about the fact that, you know, kind of there are two kind of motivations, either out of fear or from an inner peace. Now, that's important. The inner peace comes from that you understand who you are. And this, Dr. Theo, actually, Professor Theo mentioned it as well. So, quite frankly, this is lacking nowadays. You go for solutions and et cetera, but we don't seem to be ability to appeal to the inner peace in people.
Okay, now that's where I want to come back to you, Brenda. One of the things I think stand out in him as a leader is the big picture context. So somehow he managed to find that big picture that he thought was the solution to our country that we should all buy into. But then I also have written down your personal victories. So we wonder, he didn't go through MBA programs on Robben Island. He didn't lead very structurally a big organization, although indirectly it was running outside the prison walls, of course, and internationally. Maybe he obviously read a lot of books, and he did read a lot, no doubt. But personal victories. So he got to that inner peace stage, I would guess, on that prison, on that island, in that prison, that allowed him to come out and project that sort of that motivation from inner peace of where we should go rather than fear. While a lot of people at that time were driven by fear. And you might even say F.W. de Klerk, out of fear, had to make some decisions. Otherwise, it was the end. Otherwise, it was war. So personal victories is something that stands out in my mind. If you want to lead like him, if you want to be like him.
Yes, I thank you for that, Adrian. One of the most important choices we have to make is, where are you coming from? And all you come from a fear-based, that you actually live from ego, that is a destructive kind of foundation, versus coming from an authentic part of really who you are, that is at peace with yourself. And in this book I wrote, 7 Steps to Securing the Madiba Magic, I found that these 7 steps are not only the 7 steps that Madiba took, because his big picture in the end, you know, to get back to what you were saying, is a picture of freedom. And this freedom is an inner freedom. Firstly, a freedom within self, a freedom from fear, a freedom from negativity, a freedom from destruction. We've got a culture in South Africa that we call, what I call, blaming, shaming, and naming, blaming, blaming, and shaming. And if we can just just stop. That's why I say it's not time. You can just make a choice. Listen, I let go now. And we're even... everyone listening in, if you can just take your 67 minutes, I think that's what we are asking with, and say for 67 minutes, I'm going to let go of all negativity. I will check myself for my negative thoughts, for destruction, naming, blaming, and shaming other people, just for an hour. Tomorrow you do it again, because the moment you do that, the whole value system and everything we spoke about in terms of culture and nature, everything starts changing, and then your light starts to change. And these two things are, this is the first step that Nelson Mandela did. He made a choice for where he was rooted.
Okay, are you going into your seven steps? Can you quickly do that for us?
Would you like me to do that?
Yeah, not detail. Just you say seven steps in your book, and people can get the book.
But I want to just emphasize: these seven steps are not just Nelson Mandela steps.
Yeah, sure.
They went through, and this is why you can do it, and I can do it, and all can do. These are universal steps. Mm. Even our great leaders now, like Gandhi and Tolstoy, this is where he got his information, but he also got his information out of the Bible and out of the Bhagavad Gita and also out of the Quran.
Mm.
This is not necessary religious steps. These are universal spiritual steps to personal freedom. The first step is know where you are grounded and rooted. And the only choices you have, you are rooted in truth, honesty, integrity, and who you authentically are, or you are rooted in your ego. That's from fear and negativity. The next step is that you surround yourself with the people that will feed your soul and also your vision. This includes relationships, this includes business, this is where you work, and also within your families. Many people's families break up because they don't share this value system. The next step is, you ask, is who am I authentically? Who am I really? And what is my personal purpose? And this is where you get to that deeper part of authenticity, because the only way you can live your true universal calling is that when you know where you are.
Yeah.
And this you can do in a 2 or 3 hour workshop. The next step is, once you've got that in place, you ask yourself, how can I be of service? Because then I can go out onto the platforms of life and I can say, I'm bringing the authentic part of myself that Madiba said, that part of the light, that part you shine, you can bring out and you can be of service to people. On the fifth one is that you keep constant check of honesty, truth, and integrity. And this is where you have to work through the challenges of life and overstep and overcome not only barriers within self, but also within our culture and our religions. And we need to understand is that this is a call to religious leaders to get to a point. And this is what Madiba did. He didn't go and have a look what divides us. He had a look what unifies us, and he found that there's goodness in every single person, and he said, shine that goodness. This is the fundamental principle of all religions. And then the last and the seventh step is that freedom is that you do not look at your circumstances. Freedom is, I am free in my circumstances, even from my circumstances. I am free to shine my light, and because of that, I change my circumstances. And this was also the message of Jesus Christ and also of all our other religious leaders. And I think we have our current leaders doing this hopefully as well.
Okay, I think you may miss one. Know where you are grounded, rooted, number one. Surround yourself with those that feed your soul and vision, number two. Number three, who am I authentically? Number four, how can I be of service? Number five, keep constant check of honesty, truth, and integrity. And then you have number six, do not look at your circumstances. Is there one missing?
No, number six is the one of your vision and your passion. In other words, how do I live my number six? My vision and passion, because I bring my little piece of the puzzle of life. I bring my light to the bigger picture. And then the seventh one is that I hold to my freedom. I keep to my freedom. And if we have a look and translate it, it will be love and compassion. Okay. And this is the golden thread that actually connects us from heart to heart and from soul to soul.
All right, so gentlemen, jump on board. I mean, I think with Mandela, it was a colliding of a few factors that turned him into such an icon, almost a perfect storm scenario. So the circumstance, which he had no control over, he was just in the right time, right place, maybe destiny, his readiness himself, in a piece or whatever it was that he discovered, luck or destiny. You know, there's lots of things that had to collide for a man like him to come into being and for what happened around him and through him to have become such an iconic historic process and period, almost, if I can put it that way. Alice, Louis, comments on those seven or so points.
Look, I have strong feelings about any time, I think we talk about Nelson Mandela, because of also what I look at in terms of where we've been in the discourse around who he was. I think as a country, we would be doing ourselves a disservice to romanticize Nelson Mandela too much. Because he himself said he's not a saint. He doesn't want to be seen as a saint. But at the core of it, who was he? He was a fighter. He was a revolutionary. He wanted change. And I think those are things that over time would get, lessened in terms of them, ever coming to the top. But I think at the core of it, that's what this generation of young people also have to understand about who he was. So in my own humble view, I think his legacy obviously defines who we are as a country. And my view is that he is a giant on whose shoulders we must stand so that we can look at the vistas that lie ahead. I don't know whose shoulders he stood on to be able to get us to where we are today. I look at his statue outside the Union buildings. It's a huge statue. Let's picture ourselves as being fortunate to have someone like him to stand on his shoulders and look at what we can build this country.
Louis, you're raising your hand there, and I'm ending with this question. Let's all try and answer it in the last 3-4 minutes. How are we doing as a nation in building his legacy? I mean, how are we honestly doing?
Arden, just to go back to, he developed his character quite frankly, in all the time he was in prison. We had a good friend of his attend here about 2 years ago in the session, and we're saying that's when he was converted. Now, he changed, make no mistake about that, and he did it by his personal victories over himself. In that sense, it was perhaps he could never have done it without that all those years in prison. Now, the point here I want to make for us as leaders out there, please, when you're part of this blaming, naming, and shaming attitude that Brenda spoke about, I just want to add labeling as well to that.
Yes, thank you.
Then you cannot see the Madiba magic. You can't see this, the inner confidence. You can't see it because you're of necessity blaming somebody for it. So the great freedom lies about overcoming yourself. It's very important to understand. And then you can fix the world.
That is your thank biggest you project as a leader. Brenda, last comments.
Yes, I would just like to say even to our leaders and our listeners that are listening in, it's not difficult to make the shift, because you will always shift towards that something that will make you feel better, be better. And I want to connect to what you said, Ellis, is that Nelson Mandela really was initially a fighter. But in the end, he didn't use fighting and resistance and the naming, blaming, shaming and labeling. He used love and compassion. He used the light, the good quality. And fundamentally, this is at the basis of each one of us. He even said in one of his quotes, it doesn't matter how deep in our dark it's been buried there. It's there. And if we stand up, it could take a month in South Africa to turn this round. What I just would like to add here, all the leaders like Nelson Mandela go through a time what they call the dark night of the soul. That means that they initially didn't know this was their universal calling, and they used strategies coming from the ego, coming from pain, coming from fear, and they go through this dark night of the soul. I think the valley of death, maybe, where this old self starts dying. And every leader out there must know, if you've gone through this, a difficult time in relationships, money, or your health, you would have a part of yourself dying to the old, but you'll find a new part to stand up. And this is the time we have to stand up and take hands, because we can change the culture of the country.
Powerful words. Alice, last thoughts?
Yeah, let me just share with you what Bill Gates shared with us yesterday.
Yes.
You know, I was looking at people around me, and I seem to be the only one taking notes, you know, because again, Mandela... You know, when we walked in, there was a clip that was playing there of Mandela when he was launching the Center of Memory and his foundation. And he talked about the fact that our biggest deficiency now as a society is that we are forgetful. So, hence the work that the foundation is doing to sustain the memory of where we come from. So, Bill Gates said, Mandela believed in people, and I believe that personally. Why? Because he believed that people can make the future greater than their past.
Mm.
That's, you know, that resonated thing. With me. And I think Mandela should be someone we study, you know, into perpetuity, because not only was circumstance an issue with who he became, but I fundamentally believe that, you know, if you look at human nature, he possibly was an aberration, you know, and we'll never have someone like him. That we must accept, but we must then take the things and the lessons and, you know, stand on his shoulders to look at the greatness that he built.
Mm. Alice, I just want to connect to what you are saying here. Every single time a place, a country, an organization, or even the human race as a whole gets to a certain point, it triggers at a deep fundamental, even a DNA level, we can talk about that someday, it triggers new power, new potential. In one of my books, Power Intelligence, Developing Enlightened Leaders, new leaders just rise up, like Nelson Mandela, like the Gandhis, like the Tolstoys, and we can go back in history. I do believe our time of the human race and the human species, I believe the time of South Africa, there are new leaders now standing up, even maybe somebody listening here that has heard this power within themselves, that has heard this light, and they know deep within them, my time has come. Mm. If you are there, please contact us that we can take each other's hands, because it doesn't have to be done alone. Nelson Mandela, the Tolstoys, the Gandhis didn't go alone. They took hands, and we just need to connect, and let's just bring this new power and light to the world, because it's our time.
Dr. Brenna Harting, thank you so much. Interesting views there and points, and that's why we have a youth leadership platform, by the way. From
wonderful.
1 to 2 every, or 2 to 3 every day, or 2:30 to 3. Mm. So that we can get the youth to talk, to come here, share their views with each other, with the world, so that we can discover the leader inside of them. And I think it's there. There's something brewing. We saw it with Fees Must Fall. We see it all the time. There's something there that we may be underestimating, and maybe to our detriment. All right. So that was our conversation about Nelson Mandela and leadership. To end off with an Sibanye executive quote, we must use time wisely and forever realize that the time is always ripe to do right.
Who said that?
Nelson Mandela.
Nelson Mandela.
The time is always ripe to do right. And with that, we end our leadership masterclass. Stay with us for our business masterclass next, opportunities, identification, and innovation.
At Sibanye, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. We are proud of our partnership with the Leadership Platform and will continue to support leaders who are committed to growing our country.
Sibanye, we are one. Visit us on sibanyegold.co.za.
Cliff Central. The revolution. I've got something important to tell you. CliffCentral.com.